Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted Hollywood. Hollywood is haunted. It's no wonder so many spirits still wander the city of stars. Every year, thousands of people descend upon Hollywood with the hope and dream of becoming one. Some make it big, many more do not. The turmoil and heartache that ensue from a failed career or the loneliness of a successful one make the emotional energy in Hollywood very strong, an energy that doesn't always leave once the living pass on. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we discuss the ghosts of Hollywood with Jill Marie Morris. She shares with us startling new details about the ghost of Michael Jackson and possible vortexes that envelop very large neighborhoods in the hills.
How I stumbled onto Easton Drive was initially back in 2002 by error. And when I was helping my then fiance, we were driving through looking for a client in the LA, Hollywood, Beverly Hills area. And it was before we had GPS. It was actually driving by the old Thomas guides. And we got lost by the Beverly Hills Hotel. And I had said to Mike at that point, I said, I got to go check something out. Let's just keep going up this way. But the closer we got to a specific point on what is in Benedict Canyon there, I became extremely irritated, like very, very irritated, meaning as a psychic and a medium, when different energies present, there are different effects that it can have on any person, really, whether they have any abilities or not. But with me, it was super intense. And it was coming from the left as we were driving up in the canyon trying to find a turnaround point to come back down and start looking at the guide again. And it got so bad that I literally was hitting Mike in the leg saying, at one point, get me out of here. And we, I believe, turned around on Easton Drive and came back down towards the Beverly Hills Hotel. And so that was the initial encounter. And later come to find out, Mike pulled the Thomas guide out and he goes, what were you, you know, what was the big deal? The freak out. I said, Mike, there is something here that is like, it goes beyond, especially to the left heading in to the canyon, which after, with hindsight, first time I'd ever been in that area in my entire life. To the left was a Cielo Drive, which was where the site of the Manson murders, the Tate murders were. Right off. That was odd. And I said, but more so, there's a pull to this area here over in Easton. So after that point of discovery, it kind of spooked me. But at the same time, the curiosity in me led me to, when we weren't working, we started driving around the area and just pulling to Easton Drive. Then going to find out, specifically speaking with Scott Michaels of Dearly Departed Tours and Museum in LA, he said, Jill, this is really weird that you're picking up on stuff, because there is a list of very strange phenomena that has happened in Benedict Canyon in that area. So I said, my focus is more Easton Drive. So literally the house where Paul Byrne died and Jean Harlow used to live is situated right towards the very end, and it's tucked way back on Easton in Benedict Canyon. And we drove up there the first time. I'm like, holy cow, there is a massive vortex complex here. It's almost, when I say massive, 207 in Watervliet, where I had lived, there's a downflow vortex. This is a set of vortices that there. The main one is off the pool, and then there's one that goes to the side, each side of the main one. And the pull there is really, it's bad. So there is a video that we put up from last fall. We went up there with historian Elisa Jordan of LA Woman Tours, who's affiliated with Scott Michaels in Dearly Departed Tours, and she gave us the history. And coming down, George Reeves was killed, shot, well, they say suicide, shot right there in Benedict Canyon. There was a mob murder in Benedict Canyon. There are so many events that took place. And if what I ended up doing is I drew a line in the video, you'll see a little bit of a graphic. Interestingly enough, the Cielo Drive property where the Manson murders took place is literally situated underneath, due south, directly south of the Paul Byrne house, where these vortices are, and they reach into Griffith Park if you head east. They don't reach so far west as they do down towards the Beverly Hills Hotel, and then it kind of stops, the energy pole stops. And then looking further into that, finding out, looking at different investigations that other people have done, there's something really unique too with the ley lines as well as the composition of the minerals and whatnot in the canyon that make it highly unique. So I do think it's an organic set of vortices. The focal point seems to be, for some reason, right off of the Paul Byrne house on that property tucked away. And it could be, I think it's part of the reason why Benedict Canyon has had so much negative, the murders, the suicides. Anybody living in that environment, like I have lived in 207, if you have fractures, that type of environment is going to impact somebody that may not be able to deal well with living in there. And I think that has a lot to do with a lot of the chaos that's transpired. It's just a naturally occurring, really weird set of vortices that I've had people tell me, non-name celebrities as well as other people that work in the industry, that said there'd be no way you could pay them to live in Benedict Canyon. So, and that's without me seeing anything. It's just there is a vibe there. It's palpable. You can feel it when you're driving around, but for me, it was super intense. So I plan on going back and doing a little more digging around. Scott evidently has a full file of all of the nefarious things that have happened around that location, which has gone on for decades. So it's pretty strange.
Yeah, an area like that, I mean, I was going to ask you, and you did kind of answer it a bit, of when you have something that's natural like that, that's occurring, and then you have all of this tragedy, and a lot of it caused by humans. We're not talking necessarily, you know, paranormal, you know, intervention that's causing things. But, you know, my question was going to be, you know, how is it that some are affected by this and others are not when living in an area like that?
That's another great question. So what happens is that the energy will pull on you. It will mess with you. Think of, you know, how loosely how EMF works. It can cause even psychosis. It can cause paranoia. That's an EMF is more of an electrical magnetic type of situation. But think of a vortex, a downflow, as pulling massive amounts of negative energy. It's just full of sludge. So all this sludge in the area, all this energy is affecting people that may have depression, anxiety, drugs, substance abuse, alcoholism, things of that nature, even sleep deprivation. It can start to mess with your mind. So the impact, just the opposite, would be someplace like the Sedona Desert with the upflow. It's a very good, positive, naturally occurring vortices there out in the desert. People go there to make themselves feel good. It's the opposite for people that may not be able to deal with that energy interference. And some people can't. And for example, my husband in 207, he could not deal with what was going on in that house as two other men did prior to his suicide. So it just depends. It's situational. It's everything is based on that person. It's subjective to each person. But somebody that may have some issues may not do so well in that area at all. And it's not just a few things. It's a lot of very strange happening in that region. It's a very small area, actually. But and it does affect people. I've had people, like I said, that I didn't even get into what I was doing, running back and forth investigating, and they've said that you couldn't pay me to live there. It's a beautiful area, absolutely gorgeous. But, yeah, There's a vibe. There's definitely a vibe.
Let's talk about some of the strange happenings that go beyond the interactions between humans, but beyond murder and mm-hmm. just nefarious type actions that people take against one another. What are there some strange happenings that have been reported in the area that would fall into the realm of paranormal or ghostly beyond, like I said, human to human interaction?
Yes, there are. There are several sightings of apparitions in different locations. Even at the Paul Byrne house, which is lived in by the same family for several years now, who swear up and down that the house, the property is not haunted, and that's fine. But there have been several people that have had encounters there. There have been several people that have had seen animal-like things running around that they can't explain. They said it's a cross between animal and human. That goes on in that general vicinity. There are people that have seen a lot of Native American apparitions. That's probably one of the biggest things that I've been told when I've been researching this, is that there's a lot of Native American influence. That actually, I've had one person tell me they swear on a certain time of year. It's actually, I think, late May, they said, they hear drumming, like it's Native American based, and it's been that way for years. And talking to neighbors, nobody's drumming. They don't think it's the canyon carrying noise. But there have been tons of negative feeling apparitions in the canyon area at different locations. There was a house that I did look at about a year ago, and that family has been there for 12 years and really they don't want to get rid of the property. They're trying to hang on to it. But at the same time, their other family members in the household have had difficulties with being scared by apparitions. A lot of them seem to be enigmatic, though. Other than the Native Americans, they seem to be nondescript. Like I said, a lot of people will mention this weird animal slash person thing running around, and feeling drained and tired after seeing these energies. There was one that said that there was this screeching sound. Initially, apparently they thought it was like an owl, and they said that they don't think so because the screeching sound precipitates whatever this animal slash human thing is that they end up seeing. Mm-hmm. So it's spooky. If there is something, there are some scientists that said that the geological composition of some of the minerals there, is unique, very strange. But could have some impact in a couple different ways. So I think it's a kind of a convergence of a few different factors, but there's a lot of paranormal activity there. There was one woman that lived in, she didn't own the house. She lived in an apartment in a house in Benedict Canyon that I spoke with, and she moved out because she said she never until moving in there had suicidal tendencies. And then she was like, I'm out of here. I need a change. She goes, I just got to give it up and I'm going to move back towards the city, back towards LA. So she left because of that. And she would see things periodically as well. So it's just kind of like, again, it depends on the person. It depends on the situation. But there's a lot of documented stuff aside from just the human nature events caused there.
How does someone, when they're in a situation like this and they're going into the Eastern Drive area, there's obviously there's folks like you who are able to sense it just as you're driving down the road. Boom, it's there. You know something is awry with the environment. But yeah. Is there ever anything for folks who are not that sensitive, but sensitive to a level where eventually, like you had just shared, where someone was feeling suicidal and eventually said, I got to move out of here. I'm assuming when they initially found that place to live in, that wasn't the first reaction. They probably didn't even occur to them at that exact moment in time, but over time it all built up. For someone who's not on that super high level of sensitivity, is it just time that it takes to be able to feel that sort of thing?
For some, yes. And for many of them, yes, that's the case, especially the homeowners. Fortunately, that lady did get out and she's good now. She said it never happened again other than when it was, I think if I remember correctly, she said she was there a couple months. It was just over like a month or two, and she said she felt funky. Now, for most people, like the homeowners that I've spoken with up there, it's more of one situation. One of the partners knew something wasn't right. The other, I'm getting a lot of feedback. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. One of the partners sensed something wasn't right. The other one had no clue. But then it took like half a year before the other one admitted, yeah, something's not right here. Something just doesn't feel right. It's beautiful. And that's the draw. The area is so gorgeous and peaceful that any kind, especially the places that I've been, anybody that would live there, I could see where it's kind of like you overcompensate for, it's almost like a sacrifice. Even if something was a little off, you may be willing to go with it. But most of these people realized a little bit in. And then there is also one of the people that I spoke with, they don't want a lot of publicity about it because they're afraid their house won't sell down the road.
Sure.
And they don't think it's the house itself. They think it's the area. And, you know, that, like I said, there's one family where other family members are having a really hard time and, you know, they don't want to give it up, but at the same time, it affects one more than another. So, most of the time, you know, it just depends again. It could be a month or two. It could be 6 to 8 months down the road. It could be anywhere in that time frame. But usually the lights, the little flags start to pop up and the lights go off. That something is just off. It's odd. It's very odd. And I spent a lot of time up there and it just doesn't go away. It's the same thing. It was difficult for me to stand in front of the burned property. It's just almost, I would describe it for me as, think of, you know, when you're changing the radio station really super fast and you get a lot of like beep, 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 back and forth.
Sure.
That's almost like overloaded, like, but in a negative sense, what I pick up on, that's like one of the initial impressions. And it's dizzying that my stability there is not the same. I'm very off balance in that area. And again, if you think about it, well, talking to some of these people, and if you think about what they've gone through, it affects each one in some similar ways, but then in, you know, some are having really crazy dreams. Some feel they're being touched. Some feel they're being targeted. It just depends.
Mm-hmm. When it comes on, does it come on like boom, like a switch has been flipped, or is it almost like a radio signal where you're starting to get it in and it starts to come in better and better and better, and then it's a full signal? How does that come on for you when you get into an area like that?
Okay, so it's usually throws energy. So it's kind of, it may not be as strong. It gets to the strongest point once I'm closest. That's how I usually weed these things out and kind of figure out where things are. Mm-hmm. Is by where am I honing into?
Okay.
So it's kind of like you had explained, where it's kind of faded, and then the closer I get, it's stronger, stronger, stronger. It's just the energy feeling in and of itself there. And two, with a downflow, especially a set of those, vortices, what happens is it's naturally occurring, but it's also pulling any negative energy in that area. Think of it, it's kind of like a downflow tornado that's just pulling garbage and debris in a negative spiritual sense into it, in that environment. So you never know what you're going to run into. There was one person that I spoke with that still lives in the same house. It is a male, and he totally freaked me out. We've had this chat that I was not comfortable talking with him after our first meeting in the house, because I walked in and I said, "What are you doing playing with a Ouija board all the time in here?" And he goes, "It's just like the coolest thing." And he's like, this happened and this happened. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake, this is just, I can't be there, because you're pulling in. It's an extension of that. When you're using a Ouija board, you have no control and you never know what you're going to get, especially in that region. And yeah. He's pretty darn close.
Yeah.
But he loves it. He loves the negative energy. He loves the negative attention. He loves whatever he's doing on his Ouija board. He thinks it's just the cat's, you know what. So
unfortunately, at some point he may have a change of opinion due to quite an extreme occurrence. Obviously, we're talking about this is an area in the general vicinity of Hollywood, and in Hollywood in itself, a very haunted area. Lots and lots of stories from all different locations. Let's talk about some of the other areas that have a lot of energy and a lot of activity going on at them. Warner Pacific Theater being one of them on Hollywood Boulevard.
Warner Pacific Theater is actually one of my favorite creepy moments ever. Warner Pacific Theater was initially built and owned by the Warner Brothers. And essentially, it sits on Hollywood Boulevard. Back in the heyday, it was the place to go for films and debuts and whatnot. Now, when I first moved into West Hollywood in 2014, I was coming from my friend's house located up in the Hollywood Hills. I was driving back down to North Martell, where I lived, and I still didn't know my way from point A to point B, so I programmed it into my GPS. And literally as I was coming, if you look at the Hollywood sign, they used to live under the D of the Hollywood sign up in the canyon. So I maybe was just in my car maybe in an eighth of a mile, and my GPS on my phone started flashing on and off. Like literally everything, the phone, everything just flashed. And I'm like, I pulled over and it stopped and it showed me going back to North Martell. And I went down a little further and it started doing it again. And I'm like, okay, this is pretty messed up. So I'm like, whatever, it stopped. So I'm following the turns and I'm like, wow, it must be taking me a different way. And it said, you've arrived at your destination. And I'm like, I come off the hill and I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm on Hollywood Boulevard. And I look up and it's Warner Pacific Theater. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck? So I looked at the GPS and the GPS actually had programmed in some weird glitch Warner Pacific Theater. So I was like, okay. I ended up navigating home and did a little more research and talking to a friend of mine, and they're like, no, you've got to go to Warner Pacific Theater sometime. We'll see if we can get you in there. Well, I never went in, but I walked all the way around the property, and I can tell you there's some very interesting spirit energy there, which to me actually ties into a whole nother story for another time. But it was odd that I ended up in front of that theater. But there is allegedly an energy, which I do think that there is a nondescript negative energy there. But I also pick up on Jack Warner there, pretty much the gateway keeper. Some interesting conversation in spirit took place when I was standing there. And it was more or less, that's his domain, and however it was taken away from him, or there was apparently there was a sleight of hand he's not happy with. So I think there's two different things going on. I again know somebody that's been in there and said that there was some weird stuff that happened in the basement. I do think that there is some strange energy. If even just like I said, feeling it from the outside, it is still on my bucket list to go in. But there's definitely two different. There's a spirit energy of who I do think is Jack Warner. And then the other energy is a nondescript, more negative. Not too sure what that is, but it's something I didn't want to communicate with for too long.
The theater today, it sits abandoned or closed, correct?
Correct. And it had been at a few points, it had been the purpose repurposed into a church, like I can't remember the type of congregation, but it may be a couple different churches, some office space and whatnot, but it is abandoned. And but the person that said that they could get me in there would have to contact somebody, but they hadn't been able to do so. So I'm still hoping I can get in there, especially down in the basement, because of what was told to me that happened to them when they were there.
Sure.
So it's hard to say, other than I would clearly say that the man of the domain is Mr. Warner for sure. That was made very clear. And he feels very slighted by what happened to him.
Yeah.
So
when you have a property like that, do you think that the spirits that haunt it react to the current day situation or the status of the building that they once loved and, you know, and cherished and were a big part of, especially when it falls under a time like this where it's not being used as it's for its intended purpose? It's not being used at all. It's just
exactly
it's sitting and rotting away. I mean, it's almost, you know, just as the living would be upset of something that they're passionate about closing. Do you feel like the dead get upset as well when something like that changes so dramatically?
Absolutely, they do. They have a lot to say about those things. That comes up frequently when I do readings. It's really random, but they'll validate things like, I just did a reading actually for someone back east, and they were renovating a deceased family member's home. And it came up during the reading. I didn't know that ahead of time. It just came up during the reading. And that was the first reading I did. And 6 months later, I did another reading for them. And I said, oh, your dad is really not happy with this maze. He wants this brick left where it is. And she freaked out because she's like, we have gone back and forth with this brick thing forever. And so he actually gave them some direction in the reading about what to do with that remodel, and they took it. Now, I didn't know they took that advice. I just relayed the message. So 6 months later, when I was doing the reading, I said, he's so happy. Your dad is so happy now with whatever these changes are. And she goes, we did exactly what he wanted us to do. So they do respond. And that's just one example of many. It could be something smaller. It could be, why did you tear the house down? It could be tear the house down. It could be keep this the same, but you can change this. They are if they put their heart and soul into it, or they lived there for an extended period of time, or they just loved that, whether it's a business or whether it's a home, they're attached to it. They can become very attached to it, and they can create friction if they don't like what's going on.
Sure. It makes sense. I mean, it totally does make sense. Another location that I'd love to talk about, and there's several here on the list, but I think the next one on my list is the former home of Michael Jackson.
Yes, go ahead.
Now, is this home that we're talking about here, is this Neverland, or is this a different location?
I'm sorry, this is where he died in
Holy
Hill.
That's what I thought. Yes, the it was a temporary home he was there for at least several months, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was temporary, but it was so interesting. I would love to get up to Neverland, but I don't think I'll ever have that possibility to do so. But Holy Hills, I was with Scott Michaels on a tour, and we stopped outside. And in 2010 was my first encounter there. And I can tell you, I was shocked. I was shocked because, A, he did not live there that long. But what happened was, he is so present in that house, but his state of spirit is so muddled. Sometimes when spirit communicates, more times than not, if there were drugs or alcohol or some type of substance abuse in their system at the time of death, or they had like a chronic issue with abuse, that will show up in how their essence presents. So drug abuse the spirit will show up very spinny, I guess you could say. Alcohol tends to be more wobbly back and forth. It's kind of like trying to keep your balance, where the other one is totally spinny. So he presented very spinny, and he unfortunately has no clue what the heck happened to him. And he's lost. Now, he doesn't communicate well. He communicates and he can interact, but he does not know. So I was saying to Scott about this, I said he's, and I actually talked to Craig Harvey, who did Michael Jackson's autopsy, a couple times about this, and one time quite exclusively recently last year. Craig Harvey, the former chief medical examiner for the County of LA, did Michael Jackson's autopsy. And I was telling him, you know, this is what he's saying. This is what he's doing. Does this make sense? And he said, yes. He said, that's where he was found. He's in one certain location he tends to hang out, which was super strong to me, is the upstairs part of the home. He wanders. He's like, even though his children are out of there, even though he can communicate, he does not really know how. He needs to kind of be freed from that situation. But that, to me, as I talked to Coroner Harvey about that, was shows just how heavy of an amount of drugs he had in his system at the time of death and how long that must have been going on for, because he's still confused. He's very confused. And that was a little weird to me, because his essence did come through when I was doing a show in Hollywood last year, and confused. He's very, but the weirder part about that when he came through is that I didn't know Craig Harvey was in the audience, and he came through, as did Phil Hartman. But Craig did both their autopsies, but they both, because it was dark, I couldn't see who was in the audience other than the front row because of the light. So,
sure.
It was odd. Craig said exactly, it made a lot of sense with what happened with him and whatnot. He oversaw the autopsy for Michael Jackson and said that, you know, there was a ton of, you know, whatever that was that they found. I can't even remember the name. Propofol, I think, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was administered to him. So Craig didn't let me correct that. Craig oversaw the autopsy into Michael Jackson as the head coroner, but he did do actually Phil Hartman's autopsy. So he confirmed and validated some of that information that was coming through, but he's just a confused energy that likes to hang out in this one area on the second floor of that home in Holmby Hills. Weird.
Does he know he's dead?
He does, but he doesn't. He doesn't understand. That's where I've tried to do work and be like, okay, but trying to cut through that spin is really hard because he wanders. He, like, if there was ever to be a wandering apparition, that if somebody was to tell me, you know, I could have swore I saw Michael Jackson wandering through here, that would not surprise me if that took place in Neverland. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody in Holmby Hills saw him. He just doesn't quite get it. But it's, again, the state he was in at the time of death. I always call it your spiritual DNA imprint at the time of death. Everything kind of physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything converges to that moment. And he was so heavily under the influence of this drug, it's like trying to get him out of it. But it's gonna take some work, because I've been trying to since 2010, and although he can communicate, he doesn't seem to get it.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Jill Marie Morris about Haunted Hollywood. In part two, available for gravekeepers only, does Michael Jackson know that he's dead as he wanders the halls of Holmby Hills? If someone dies under the influence of drugs, are they able to sober up on the other side? What does Lemmy, a former band member of Motorhead, still spend his days doing at the Rainbow Room? Are cemeteries common places for spirits to hang out? And do spirits of the deceased celebrity still interact with one another on the other side? We'll discuss all of that and more as we continue our interview with Jill Marie Morris. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. That's what allows this show to stay on the air. Without that support, this show would not exist. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll have access to all of the part twos of our episodes, get everything in their entirety, every single episode, and have access to every single episode months before they are released to the public. If you're ready to binge away on our show and need some more to listen to, patreon.com/thegravetalks is where you go to sign up. $5 a month gives you access to every single episode, part one and part two, in their entirety. You will love it. And I thank you greatly for your support in allowing us to do this show. This is a listener-funded show through patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.